Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. And this morning we are going to the farm and then directly to the pet. This company is fascinating, and so is Chicagoan Jackson Jones Story. Farm to Pet is the name of the company. Jackson, you're the founder, you're the owner of this company that is all Chicago born, right?
That's correct, Steve. First of all, thanks for having me on.
So I want to talk about the company and what these treats are. Let's give an overview first, and then we'll talk about you, because your story is an interesting one. But, you know, I've seen, I think, every pet treat there is on the market, because, you know, I do what I do, and people send me things, or I go to pet stores and I see it. Yours are different. Explain how they are novel.
Yeah, sure. I think the major difference is simplicity. Our treats are very simple from the beginning of, you know, the idea about this company was to make something that is natural. And the most natural thing is something that is not processed. There's no additives, there's no salt, there's no preservatives. In addition, you know, the poultry and the beef that we have is non-GMO. So I really wanted to start with what would be the best, most simplistic protein for our pet. Started out with dogs and thought there'd be no better way to take a chicken breast and to be able to make that, transform that into a very palatable dog treat without doing anything else to it. And so that's really what we have. And we've kept true to that. Our mantra is single ingredient pet treats. So we are very proud that we do not do additional processing like, I don't know, 90%, 95% of the other brands out there in order to bring the highest quality treats to your pet.
And we'll talk more about that. And you mentioned dog treats, but I know you now have cat treats as well. And pure protein, if anyone is all about that, it's cats. But I want to hear your story. Did you wake up one morning and say, you know, I've got this idea. There's a niche in the market that hasn't been filled. How did that all come about?
Well, not exactly, but I did have a friend that huge dog lover. He's in South Florida, and he said, "Man, I have this treats that that my dog just absolutely loves," and it was also a single ingredient treat. And this is quite a few years ago. He said, "I just don't see anything else like that out in the marketplace." But the issue was they were hard to supply. He could barely find them in stores. And he approached me based on my background and said, "Hey, would you be interested in potentially looking at this as a business to purchase and you could operate it?" And I said, "No way." It was a family owned business in Florida, and we're here in Chicago with my family. And you know, I had a career and really wasn't interested. But that thought stuck in my head for quite some time. And you know, we got into the crazy times of COVID, where you know, people were not going outside. Certainly, we were kind of stuck in our house, and I decided, well, I have a little extra time now. Maybe I could, you know, make a single ingredient treat. And so I went and got a dehydrator, took my wife's KitchenAid, and went to work, and was able to produce something that was different than what my friends had experienced. But it was along the same mantra, where it was a single ingredient and it was a dehydrated chip. And so that's really how it started, you know. And then I got excited because my dog Rooney, she loved them. She absolutely loved the treats, still does. And I said, well, how can I make more of these? And then how can I put them in a package? And it kind of took off from there.
You said with your background, it seemed to make sense. What background do you have?
Sure. I actually had an engineering degree in college, but spent most of my career working in called industrial manufacturing businesses, so companies that make things. I've worked for a company CFO. I've worked in technology and IT. I've also run supply chains, manufacturing, logistics. So you name it, a lot of things related to making and shipping things at scale. And so that was always fun, but I was always making other folks' products, right? So this was exciting to imagine, hey, I could take something from scratch, everything from the raw materials, which in our case were very simple, all the way to a finished product and apply some of that knowledge. And so after many years working in a corporate role, which I really always loved, I love the challenges of you know, going into new factories, starting new factories, et cetera. But I was ready to do something different. And so this was an exciting opportunity to take something on that could be our own and see where it goes.
Were you intimidated by the notion that the big pet food companies, all of them, have so many different treats, not to mention all the smaller operators, of which there are probably hundreds out there today, that make treats at one level or another level for dogs, for cats, or dogs and cats? I mean, there is so much competition out there. I mean, you quickly rose to the top, but you didn't know that, or maybe you did when you started that. I don't know. I would have been afraid. What were you thinking?
Yes, I was afraid of the sales. I've never been in a sales role. As I mentioned, I've always been kind of in operations, you know, worked in with numbers, but also people and making things and equipment. And so the sales side really scared me. And it scared me just because I didn't know what the marketplace looked like. I also didn't have an experience in the pet industry. And as you know, it's a massive industry. There's a lot of really well operating companies there, and there's a lot of barriers to entry. So if you want to get into a PetSmart, they don't just open the door and say, hey, you know, small vendor, we're going to put you on a shelf. You know, there's a process, there's distributors, there's a lot of, you know, testing and you have to have the capacity. So that was never an option for us. So what I did was I actually found someone who could help me get the product up on Amazon. And that was the first test to say, hey, if people on Amazon want to buy this and we start to get some good reviews, you know, maybe we can do something different. And at the same time, I again, did not know how to do the sales and the competition. So I literally made some bags, some packages, and went to local pet stores and groomers in the Chicago area. And luckily the response was great. There were some people, our first customer in Bridgeport was able to go put it in their groomer, and they absolutely loved it. So just having that real world experience, being able to get into a couple stores, gave me some confidence that, okay, if we can do that here, how can we do it for other places? And really start to learn too, because the product wasn't perfect when we started, started to get feedback on what was good, the crispiness and then what was not. You know, how can we change the packaging to make it more convenient for owners, et cetera. So once we started on that path, I think it became easier and less intimidating when you realize that there's a whole other world besides the big box, pet stores that are very open to, you know, working with smaller brands like Farm to Pet and putting them in the stores.
Well, we're going to talk more about that. And we're going to also talk about what the initial response was to this product that is a little different than some others out there. It's called Farm to Pet, based in Chicago. Jackson Jones is here, and we'll also talk about the product itself. FarmToPetTreats.com, that's the website, and we'll come back with more next. Talking with Jackson Jones, the name of the product is called Farm to Pet. Jackson Jones is the founder, the president of the company, Chicago-based, and who would think in your career you would be operating what is kind of really like a pet food factory? Is that, have I overstated what you are here?
No, we are a manufacturer. We pride ourselves that we make products. So we take in chicken, human grade chicken and poultry, and now beef, and we turn it into a treat, you know, and so that's really what our operation is. We also do the packaging and distribution, but at our core, we're making a product. And that was something that when I did start was very important. I did not want to use a third party. That's very prevalent, as you know, in the industry, where some of these large factories will make, you know, products for, you know, hundreds, literally tens of hundreds of brands will just have different labels coming out with very similar non-differentiated products. And for me, you know, personally, to have some fun with it, but also to feel like we had a value prop, you know, compared to some of those well-entrenched, you know, competitors, I believed very strongly that we needed to manufacture with our quality, with our process, and produce that ourselves. And then going back to the beginning of your question, no, I never thought I'd be running a pet treat business nor a factory. But, you know, after a couple of years now, it's a way of life, and I really enjoy it.
So where do you get the product from, the fresh beef or fresh chicken or turkey? Do you raid farms in Wisconsin, or I'm thinking maybe not? Do you go into back doors of butcher shops and say, I need everything you have in the store? How do you get your product?
Well, that's certainly changed since we started. You know, when we started, it was literally very local to Chicago, working with directly with, you know, a processor of chicken. You know, as we expanded to get into turkey, we had a farm of turkey farm in Kankakee, Illinois. And then we've branched out with a few other suppliers in order to be able to, you know, satisfy our need. And so right now we have a number of farms that we're procuring from. Most are really almost all are in the Midwest, you know, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and then, you know, that's where the majority of our product is coming from right now. And in our key is we have a couple of requirements really for our poultry, non-GMO. This is human grade. This is not expired product. This is not, product with parts, et cetera. So we do literally get chicken breast. And so that's it. And so it's not going to have that fat. And that's what gives us our differentiation that we, you know, quite frankly, we spend the money on quality product coming in to our facility and sourced in a responsible way so that we can produce the products that we have today for the pups. And I think that's what it seems from our customers that they really value about our company is that we're bringing, you know, that human grade, we're bringing a very high quality product to the market, where I think has been the norm with some of the competition out there is, you know, to cut corners on the production because it's very easy, right, to add in another product to make that protein go a little bit further, or to get expired product or other things that could not be human consumption.
Yeah, it's disappointing to hear that others are getting expired product. I myself did not know that. All right, so your treats are pure protein, really. Now, there are some dogs, particularly some older dogs, pure protein would not be a good thing, but I need to explain a little bit. These treats look like little disc? Would you agree with it? Like,
yeah, very, a little, called a wafer or a disc.
Yeah.
Called chips, and so they do crack like a chip, but they're round in nature, about 2 inches round.
And you can break them up easily, so the dog doesn't have to have a whole one of these. So with older dogs, what we see are dogs oftentimes that can't handle the protein. On the other hand, that 15-year-old dog, 18-year-old dog even, may need some encouragement to eat the meal that dog is supposed to have, which, interestingly enough, may be a low-protein meal. But breaking this in small pieces and putting this on the meal with approval from your veterinarian, I think, Jackson, you have another niche just in people potentially doing that.
Yeah, we found that through our processing, as you mentioned, Steve, we take chips and they are breakable. But as you're putting them in the bags, or in some cases, they come through the production process and it's not a full chip or it does break. When that started happening, that's still good product. But we decided that, you know, we were going to basically make it into a powder. And so we make a dog food topper, a pet food topper, really, because it's great for cats as well.
Yeah.
That we grind up the product. We have it in a shaker jar. And I always thought that would be a secondary product, kind of nice to have, that we're not wasting, you know, obviously our chips. But people have really taken to it, and the dogs have, as a meal supplement. So many dogs, like you mentioned, that are not getting the protein from their kibble. That's a great way. It's an encouragement for dogs to eat. I've even seen people that say, hey, we'll mix it in water. We'll do all sorts of crazy things and make recipes, with that protein powder. So it's the same single ingredient treat, turkey, beef, and chicken, but in a powder, kind of a sprinkle format that you can put on the kibble.
Yeah, these toppers are all the craze now for a reason. We have more older pets than we've ever had. And also pets that are, for example, recovering from one surgery or another. They may not feel well for a couple of days. For all sorts of different reasons to encourage feeding, our choice at one point in time was stick it in the microwave, warm it up, the dog or cat will smell it more, and all of that is still true. Maybe adding some chicken bouillon, but now you're adding a lot of salt. Adding some fresh chicken, okay, that'll work for some pets. But here is another option, and the reason why those toppers are selling so well, it's a great idea, and you were kind of ahead of your time in a way. All right, I want to talk more about these products, which I'm so excited about. And by the way, you can check it all out on the website, farm2pettreats.com. Jackson Jones, right here in Chicago, a Chicago success story. And post-pandemic, which is nice to see, too. Farm to Pet will be back with more. Next week on the show, it is the great Victoria Stillwell from It's Me or the Dog. Victoria will talk, I know this because I want to bring it up, about shock collars. And I'll tell you, now there are more than ever, dog trainers on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube, who are suggesting, look at what I did. This dog would have eaten me. And now I'm using a shock collar and the dog isn't going to eat me anymore. Well, that may be true. But what also happens when you use shock collars? And in England, where Victoria Stillwell is originally from, they are, I believe, about to ban shock collars. Petco has banned shock collars. Hooray for you at Petco. Other countries all over the world have banned shock collars. There's a reason for that. In fact, there are lots of reasons for that. And we'll talk with Victoria next week about what those reasons are. Jackson Jones, Farm to Pet, farm2pettreats.com. All right. So as we described, they are like, well, you used a couple terms. I'm going to use a different one now, like a small cracker. Because you could break them into small pieces, these treats, or give a whole one, particularly to a larger dog, and you make them for cats, too. Now, Jackson, I'll be honest with you. They are pure protein. I don't think there's a cat on the planet who doesn't say, yes, this is my dream come true. Have you heard from cat owners?
Yeah, that's, and quite frankly, that's how we ended up with the line. You know, I had an idea to eventually expand to cats. Once we were able to get, you know, the capacity, there's a lot of work and on getting, you know, all the equipment and our current product lineup for dogs, perfected, but we started a little early, and that was because so many cat owners were giving us reviews, you know, on social media, on our Instagram, Facebook pages, and showing pictures of them breaking up our treats and giving it to the cats. And the cats were very excited to have the protein, as you mentioned. And so we really just try to make it easier. So we take our chips and we have an industrial, of all things, Parmesan cheese grater, believe it or not, that we put the product through. We've custom made it to crunch the chips into the right size grains. And then we put it in the bags and we're selling that now to cats.
Yeah, and to cats, it's all about texture. So, well, dogs certainly like that crunchiness, by the way. Cats, cats, the way they decide what they like is really interesting. It is based on smell, like dogs, but far more than dogs and far more than people, it is all about the texture. And this is all about cats because that crunchiness, and I suggest that you've had people tell you this, is what cats love.
Yeah, correct. And they also need something that's cat sized, right? You're feeding to very large dogs, and dogs run the gamut from very small to enormous, and they all seem to be able to take this chip, or you can break it into little pieces. But it's a lot of work for a cat to go break up a chip. They are very dense chips, and so we just want to make it easier. And we found that was really the kind of the sweet spot where the owner could, you know, keep the treat available in the bag and sealed and fresh and still be able to easily put it in a dish or put it on a food topper as well for the cats. And it's really taken off so far.
For dogs or for cats, I am all about using the treats that they really like for training purposes or enrichment purposes. So have you had even dog trainers? And if you haven't, here's a market for you, because I could see where dog trainers would, in that little pouch that dog trainers have and teach you to have, especially when you have a puppy and you're walking down the street, you want your puppy to sit, you're outside, you want your puppy to experience something good. If your puppy is kind of worried about the environment, for all these different purposes. And yes, I like the idea of training cats too, by the way. For all of these things, I could see where your treats, because they are so motivating, could be used as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a lot of fun to see what, you know, all these paw parents have done on social media. You know, that's really where we see a lot of the activity, you know, training, you know, doing flips, doing tricks, being patient. We've had dogs that have put chips on their nose and sit there and wait for the signal. you know, we have our, quite frankly, our largest customer base is, you know, daycares, doggy daycares, groomers, and trainers. And so we have a huge, you know, customer base where dogs are in a captive space, and they, quite frankly, they need to obey. And this is one great way to do it with a treat. That's very motivating. It's very, you can smell it. It smells great. It's very dense. And so the dogs are really able to react to that treat in that type of environment, where, you know, some of the other treats aren't quite as motivating. And so that's what we've heard back from our customer base, is that they love to have the treats. We also sell them in small sample packs of six. And so it's a kind of a bite size, snack for the dogs, when they go and they stay at the daycare or when they're being groomed, et cetera. So I think that is our largest use case, besides just the health benefits of the treats, is in the training arena.
Also, I want to be clear about something, because when we say single ingredient, people think, oh, it's hypoallergenic. So this might be beneficial for some of those dogs or cats that have allergies, but I'm guessing you don't market your treats as hypoallergenic necessarily.
Not necessarily, but we always recommend to start with turkey. The turkey is, you know, the most mild on dogs for the largest percentage of dog population. You know, some dogs do have chicken allergies, and in some cases, those allergies may be with the chicken itself or some of the byproducts that come along with the chickens, some of the treats that they've had before. But regardless, we like to recommend, you know, starting with turkey. Because that's a great way to tell if your dog can handle the treats and stomach that. And you know, that's really been our lead-in for the hyperallergenic.
And I would suggest also there's a fine line between food intolerance and actually being allergic. So many dogs are actually food intolerant or specific protein intolerant. They're not necessarily allergic per se. So that is where I would suggest you have a huge opening for yourself. Listen, I congratulate you on all your success, man. I mean, this is a Chicago success story, and you're going to celebrate, scary to talk about, at Halloween. Blah, 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 blah. Explain what you are doing.
Yeah, Halloween is a really fun time for all. You know, for Chicagoans, it's hopefully still good weather out.
Maybe
that other season that comes up. But, you know, it's a time to really go be with your neighborhood. The kids have fun. And we didn't want to leave the dogs out. So there's so many dogs that are dressing up in costumes and dogs that are part of the family. And we thought it would be fun. We started last year with our first, iteration of snack size, Halloween treats. And so for the dogs, they can grab, instead of a candy bar, they get six pieces of either turkey or chicken that they can pass around, give out during Halloween, you know, take on walks if they're going with you, really be part of the trick-or-treating experience. This year we stepped it up, and we actually have a box full of 31 that comes prepackaged that you can do two things. You can either set it on your porch if you're going to leave your house, and it's a great way for dog owners to be able to go and take candy, kind of like the kids from the bowl. Hopefully they don't take it all. Some of the kids. But another way is you can open it and you can share it really with your neighborhood dogs. And so we're very excited about that. We're doing a Halloween costume contest. There's a lot of fun things on social that's going to go along with that. I think it's just a great way to bring the community. And speaking of community, that's one other thing I just mentioned about this business that was new to me is the dog and the cat and the pet world is just a wonderful, positive place. And we want to contribute to that with everything that we're doing on social media, you know, with the dog health, as you mentioned, the training, some of the other benefits of what we're trying to bring into that, because dogs are part of the family, cats are part of the family. And I think this is just another extension of that, to be able to have fun and really all celebrate together.
How do folks find you in social media?
At Farm to Pet. So you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all at Farm to Pet, one word.
Perfect. And farmtopettreats.com is where the website is. All those places have information about the Halloween contest?
They do. Yes.
All right. Perfect.
We're shipping the treats now, and there'll be some more information coming out. So if you're listening and interested, please follow, and more to come.
And I hear I may be the super judge for that.
We're working on something, Steve.
Okay. All right. That sounds exciting. All right. Mm-hmm. Farm2PetTreats.com. Jackson Jones, Chicago's own. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Dr. Tammy Grubb is the president of the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management and International. And you're president. That's so cool.
I know. It's a little scary, isn't it? I feel like an adult. I'm grown up. I just hope I fulfill my role well. I'm working on that.
What would the goal be? To inform people that, yes, their pets can be in pain and they can do something about it?
Absolutely. And we want – pain is everybody's problem, right? It's not just a veterinarian's problem. It's not just me as an anesthetist problem. So we want to educate everybody about what pet pain looks like and give them resources and how to talk to your veterinarian and give veterinarians resources about what's out there. And so really just doing everything we can to recognize pain and eliminate pain in our patients.
And in dogs and cats, pain can come from – unexpected sources.
That's absolutely right. There's a lot of undiagnosed pain. I know that because I have missed diagnosing pain in the past. And, you know, if we see an injury or we know there's a surgery, those are pretty common. Like, okay, that causes pain. But it's the things we can't see. And just to give you an example, I really think we underdiagnose and underestimate abdominal pain in our cats and dogs because we don't see what's going on in that abdomen. And yet, Steve, I'm not meaning to ask a personal question, but if you've ever had a bellyache, how did that feel?
Of course, not so good.
Not so good.
Yeah.
But our pets often, our patients often just kind of sit quietly and don't show that. But it's raging pain. I know if you've had like gastroenteritis, that can be really painful.
Well, so, one example, I suppose, and it's common that dogs and cats have pancreatitis.
Yes.
And that is actually a very painful condition.
It really, really is. And very much underdiagnosed. And again, it's because we don't see a lesion, so we're not really thinking about it.
So to your point, the signs of that, I'll stick with that. The signs of that are, you know, a dog throwing up or maybe having a loose stool, things we can actually see.
Right.
But we can't see pain.
That's
and
right.
Those dogs or cats are concurrently in pain.
Absolutely. And you're 100% right. We don't see pain. You'll never see pain. What we see is the impact of pain. And so for a lot of those, me included, I'm not saying everybody else, me included, we need to say, okay, we know pancreatitis is painful. And what we see in this dog or cat is a change in behavior. It's usually active and now it's not. So yes, that's probably partly because it doesn't feel good. But we also know the disease causes pain. So part of it is pain. Let's treat the pain that we know is there, even if we can't see it, because we can't.
You know, it's been said forever that cats are finicky, and I suppose that can be true. But I think that cats suffer dental pain far more than we thought, and their finickiness is often just that.
Oh, you're, again, 100% right. And just think about dental pain in a human. We go running and screaming to the dentist because we can't stand it.
Literally.
Yeah. And our patients have exactly the same innervation, the same nerves to those teeth. They get the same inflammation. They feel the same way we do, but they still eat, and they eat for survival. It hurts, but they eat to survive. So just because they're eating doesn't mean they don't have pain. And I'm with you. Dental pain. Come on. Look at it in people. It's the same in cats and dogs.
So how do you know? So if that cat scarfed down food and now is being quote unquote a bit finicky, that cat isn't necessarily just being finicky, is he or she?
Right, because that's a change. That's a change in that cat's intake. So if it was always finicky, okay, it's a little harder to diagnose. But if it's a change, something's wrong. And it might be pain. It might be some disease. Whatever it is, if your cat changes its eating habits, see your veterinarian.
Yeah, and it's not – or dog. And it's not necessarily only dental pain. Oh, that's a big one. We talked about GI pain. It can be that. But it can be anything. It can be jaw pain. Even, I suppose, from who knows what, you know, that your veterinarian can't find if your veterinarian isn't seeing your pet.
That's absolutely right. We love to diagnose pain because then we can treat pain, but you got to bring your pet in.
Yep. Dr. Grubb, it is always good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks back, Steve. Love it.
So here's a question that one of you have asked, and you know what? I love this question because the answer is way more nuanced than you might think and varies from dog to dog. The question is, why does my dog stare at me? So here are the possibilities. Love. That's really one of them. Researchers have demonstrated absolutely that the bond is so powerful that love is really the right word. Our dogs do love us. And as humans often stare lovingly at those we love, dogs do it even more often. Soul. If it seems like your dog is looking into your soul, wants to crawl right inside you, that's kind of right, actually, for many dogs. Of course, your dog is also sensing your emotions all the time with his or her sense of smell, observing your body language, but also by staring at you, they're trying to pick up on how we are feeling. Attention. It's interesting that humans universally respond to being stared at, and so do dogs. Try this. Try this at home. Your dog is looking the other way. Stare at your dog. Your dog at some point in time will sense it. Try this with your significant other. They'll sense it too. It's no different, really. Dogs are trying to communicate something, perhaps, when they stare at us. It could be time for dinner. Instead of barking, some dogs will, I need to go potty, or communicating they're in pain, potentially. Stressed out. There are lots of signs of stress in dogs that we might not quite pick up on. It's subtle, like a yawn or lip licking or lifting up a front paw or staring or watch out. Unlikely to be a case with the dog you live with, but a dog staring may be a precursor to aggression. Context matters, and so do dogs' additional signals, like vocalizing, especially a deep bark or a growl, snarling, tail wagging downward real fast, and the ears are down too. All of that can mean, watch out, I'm going to get you. So who doesn't like to take a selfie with their pets, right? I mean, you're somewhere, anywhere, and you meet someone you've not met before. You might show them a picture of your kids, but you're definitely going to take out your phone and show them a picture of your dog or your cat. I mean, that's what we do, right? So why not show everybody? The Human-Animal Bond Association is celebrating International Human-Animal Bond Day on November 8th. And to do that, the Human-Animal Bond Association is asking for photos or short videos of your pets with you, demonstrating the bond. It may be used on the website for the Human-Animal Bond Association. It might be used in Human-Animal Bond Association social media. Definitely you can email. And here's what to do. Email the image or the short video to Steve at SteveDale.tv. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.